Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
These are dark times, young Cuke.
What do you mean, Obi-Wan Kenobi?
For over 1,000 generations, organic food like us lived in harmony with the ways of the farm.
The farm?
Yes, Cuke. The farm is what gives us our power. It's a kind of a field that creates all edible things.
Wow.
But alas, the market has been taken over by the dark side of the farm. An empire of pollution and pesticides has ruthlessly conquered the market, nearly wiping out our organic birthright with unsustainable, short-sighted practices like genetic engineering, irradiation, and massive chemical pesticide use. Seduced by artificially lower prices, people don't even want to know where their food comes from. The true ways of the farm are now almost forgotten. But there is a new hope. A growing resistance called the Organic Rebellion is fighting back.
Tofu Ditu, where are you?
You must learn the ways of the farm if you are to join the rebellion and rescue Princess Lettuce.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Wow. Of course, you will need to find friends to help you on your way.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davy company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. If Mike says he's growing a pear, he's literally growing a pear. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time. And I think I would be remiss on this beautiful, if overcast, Sunday morning if I didn't play a little bit of this. And some of you are going, what? What is, Carol, are you one of those people that just sits there and says, huh?
Absolutely. I have no idea what that music
is. That's good.
Good. I'm glad you think that's good.
I think it is good. I think it's good that people don't have any idea. And I assume a lot of my listeners don't have any idea, don't follow sports at all.
Okay. Yeah. So are you going to clue us in, or is it a secret?
Michigan, Michigan 41, Notre Dame 30. And I know there's a lot of Notre Dame fans in the city, but there's a lot of Michigan fans here, too. And
yeah, definitely.
I posted on Facebook before I went to bed last night, and a lot of people responded because, it's interesting how many people of various walks of life are still interested in sports, even gardeners, even environmentalists. You go to a university, you root for that team. At least I do. I think you're more loyal to your college team than any other team.
Oh yeah,
certainly more than your city team.
Well, yeah, I would think. Well, Chicago is definitely a huge sport city.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I'm feeling a little lonely here. I mean, I could do the Mouseketeer. Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
You've been gone a while.
Yeah, I've been gone a while, but I'm back.
And the terrorists didn't get you or anything when you flew around?
No.
Because when Carol left to do a little vacation, this was the height of the, remember, the terrorist alerts and all that going on.
Right. That was a couple weeks ago, they were saying, scaring us, you know, yellow,
doing a good
red,
job. Yeah,
purple alerts.
No, they don't have that anymore. They just scare you in other ways. It's just...
Right.
You know, when they need to get something done in Washington, push something, some measure through, then
wag the dog.
They scare the dickens out of you, and then say, "Oh, well, it's a good thing we dodged that." Oh,
yep.
Isn't that great?
Yep. Glad to be back.
And Lisa's not here, and Rob's not here, and Sarah's not here. So you're doing it all. So you got the Twitter up and the Facebook.
I've got Facebook. I'm just clicking into Twitter right now. So
if you folks, those who follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and usually there's the big staff here is blowing stuff out of here and into the internet airwaves, the internet electrical waves, a lot of them are gone. They're all out of here doing one thing or another. So it's just you, Carol. You come back from vacation and everything gets dumped on you.
Right? I've got many hats on.
That's the way it works here.
Yep.
All right. Patience, if you're out there on social media today with us, we'll do the best we can. In fact, you folks on Twitter can tweet for me. You don't have my password, but just put the @MikeNow up there and let folks know what's going on in the show. And it's going to be a great show. Dr. Wally from Bertholdt's Garden Center is here with us, a great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. We're going to answer some gardening questions, so get your garden questions ready at 773-763-9278. They got a big deal coming up at Bertholdt's next weekend. It is their fall open house, and Wally's going to have a seminar there about putting your veggie gardens to sleep. And we're doing a preview of that today. He's standing by on the phone right now. I'll get to him in just a second. Their fall open house is all 3 weekend days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I hope you stop by at Bertholdt's next week and take advantage of it. Of course, they're at 434 East Avant Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. As I always say, look for the iconic windmill out front. There you go. So Wally's with us in just a second. And we're going to try to answer a couple of questions we had last week, which was kind of interesting. I was not able to do it in real time, but that's why I know smart people and I bring them on the show. Rick DeBio weather at 9:45, as always. And then the second hour, there's going to be a lot of people in the studio. And in fact, I don't actually know how many people are going to be here. I just know a lot. So it's a good thing you're in the booth today, Carol, because I think they're going to pack the place here.
Okay.
And
well, hopefully they will.
It includes good folks from Angelic Organics Learning Center and Liberty Prairie Foundation, which is... sponsors the Prairie Crossing Farm up there. We're going to be talking about and to new farmers. How do you become a farmer? And you should know, and I mentioned this on my website, and as always, and I probably should mention this more often, but every week before the show, I take the time to look at the subjects
on my program, and then I write them up on this week's show. And if you're listening along, you can click right on to links that are there, get more educated yourself, learn about the issues. For instance, today, for September 8th, the headline is, "It Takes a Village to Create a Farm." And that's what I've discovered by talking to the folks at Angelic Organics Learning Center and Prairie Crossing Farm. And we're going to talk about that today. Where are the new farmers coming from, and how difficult is it to learn that skill and that profession? What do we have? 313, more than 313 million people. I think it's up to 316 now, million people living in the United States. Less than 1% claim farming as an occupation. And about 2% actually live on farms. I got these numbers from the EPA. In 2007, only 45% of farmers claimed farming as their principal occupation. The farm population, well, about 60% of the farmers in this country are 55 years old or older. The average age of a principal operator of a farm is now 57 years old. The percentage of principal farm operators 65 years or older has increased to almost 10% since 1969. Here's another way to put it. Farmers over 65 outnumber those under 35 by 3-1. So I ask, where will the next generation of farmers come from? We're going to have some answers to that question in the second hour. But in the first hour, like I said, give us a call. If you got questions about, we're going to start to wrap up the season right now, and there might be things you want to do in the fall to get ready for the winter and then next spring. And that's why we have Dr. Wally on the phone right now. How are you, Wally?
Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. And of course, we all know that Dr. Wally is not a real doctor. Or are you studying, maybe? Are you cracking the books so you can get the MD?
Oh, constantly.
And Wally is the garden center manager at Bertholdt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. It sounds like the kind of thing next week that folks should stop by, because obviously you're going to have a lot of sales and stuff. But more important, well, maybe not more important, as important, is the knowledge that people can get there from you. And you also have some other folks who are going to be doing presentations there. And I know that I've got it. I mention it later on in the show, but let me bring that up. Chris Wagner, one of your senior flower designers, is going to be there on fall planting and decorating as well, right?
Correct. She'll be doing demos throughout the day on Saturday. So if anybody needs a few suggestions on how to put a real nice-looking container together or a little decorating ideas, just stop on by. It's going to be real nice and casual. They're going to be throughout the day, so whatever time of the day you come by, there should be something happening.
Great. Great. All right. Let's start with something. I gave you some homework.
Yes, you did.
Sorry about that. But that is because last week we had a couple of questions that came up at the end. Let's start with the one that seems to be the easiest. And that is a guy actually from Jersey City. I love it, the fact that I got people in Jersey City listening to the show. He was asking about Queen of the Night and how to propagate it. And I know that, at the time, I didn't. And it's a cactus, and he's obviously growing it indoors. You and I talked about it a little bit. And what did you find out about that?
The Queen of the Night is an unusual cactus. It gets a beautiful night flower. It's in the succulent family, of course. It has like long, kind of like it's branching. There's some in the leaf structure. It's more considered branching. Real easy to propagate. I talked to a neighbor of mine that's a cactus expert, and he said it's just as simple as breaking off one of the, he calls them pads, or, you know, little sections. It can be rooted in water, or it can be dipped in a rooting solution, or it can be just put in a good potting medium. Really exceptionally easy to root and to propagate new ones that way.
Yeah, and what I found out when I was doing a little research on this, and part of the problem is, when you say queen of the night, there's a bunch, or several at least, night blooming cereus and queen of the night both refer to several different cacti.
Correct.
And you have to know which one you're dealing with. And I suspect that the one that the gentleman had last week was Selena Sirius grandiflorus. And again, I was funny because I was doing a garden talk just the other day, and I was pointing this out to some of the people in the room. I said, look, if you're going to ask a question about a plant, you got to know what the plant is. It's really hard to diagnose something, especially on the radio, if you don't have the exact, well, first of all, if you don't have the genus, let alone the species. And I think that a lot of folks think, oh, well, that's for geeks. Well, no, it's not. It's okay. It's like calling your auto mechanic and saying, I got a problem with my car. And he says, well, what kind of a car it is? And he goes, I don't know. It might be a Ford. It might be a Chevy. It's blue. Does that help?
You know, it's kind of funny you bring that up. Because of the Latin terminology on plants, the nomenclature, it's there for a reason. You know, you can find out information on plants using the Latin name throughout the world. It's one of the reasons it was selected. Latin is a language that's never going to change. It's internationally known.
Because nobody uses it.
Well, it's there, but...
Well, that's the problem with living languages. They tend to change.
Yeah, correct.
You know, they bring in stuff. Like, English has brought in words from so many different languages.
Right.
But Latin right now, although we do tend... Some of the Latin names, we do put in English and incorporate them into it. So even that changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that, you know, if you're doing a large garden and you want to really keep track of your plant materials, if you can write down when you purchase it and if it's possible to hang on to the plant tag, but if you can write the common name down and the Latin name, it's so very easy to get information that way on it with the way the internet is now. Just simply Google up the name, care of whatever, and you have it. And also when you're troubleshooting, you know, with digital cameras nowadays, you know, if that gentleman would have taken a shot of the plant and emailed it to you, you could have probably certainly got the proper, exactly the proper type of plant it was from just the images.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like I say, there's a plethora out there, and just as you're going through the internet and you look at the images, you can see that there's always a few plant materials that are tossed in there that are relative to that type of plant but are not exactly that one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy enough to ID if you do have an image of it. And that's one thing I like to let my customers know. I at least write... If you're not going to write the Latin name down, the common name is good because, say, for instance, in a hydrangea, there's different pruning times for certain types of hydrangeas. Certainly with clematis, there's like four different pruning schedules that you can use if you have a proper type of clematis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's often asked, when should I prune? Well, what type of plant do you have?
Exactly. And speaking of hydrangeas, and we mentioned it on the show many times, it's probably the most often asked question. When do I prune my hydrangea and why isn't it blooming? And they're often related.
And why is it turning pink when it's supposed to be blue?
Well, that, yes, exactly. Well, that's the soil. That's us, you know.
Right.
So you know, folks, that if you want blue hydrangeas, you need to have acidic soil. In the Chicago area, we have alkaline soil. And that tends to turn those things pink. Now you can fight that, and some people do, and they, you know, they're proud of the fact that they can make their hydrangeas turn blue. It's because they add ammonium sulfate to the soil.
Well, aluminum sulfate.
I'm sorry, aluminum. Sorry, thank you. Aluminum sulfate to the soil. And there are ways you can do that, but you're. To keep it blue, you're going to be constantly manipulating the soil because the soil tends to revert.
Yeah, exactly. The way our soil is around here, without you amending it yearly, within a year or so, it's back to alkalinity. That's where just a little less expensive soil test kit comes into play if you're gonna come in, try to do plants like that, so you can keep a track on what pH your soil is, you know, if it's a little acidic or alkaline. A pH meter will work if it's done properly. You have to keep in tune on that. And the other thing is, too, that you have to realize that if you're going to use an acidic fertilizer, that is usually not enough to change the pH of the soil.
Good point, so, Wally. Yeah.
So you know, people are under a conception, I can take some of this blue water-soluble fertilizer that's for evergreens, and it's supposed to be acidic. Well, it's going to keep them blue. Well, it does not. It's an amendment with like either aluminum sulfate or what I prefer to use is sulfur. It's a little less buildup in the soil. That type of thing.
Well, from what I understand, and I think I learned this from Jennifer Brennan, what she does is aluminum sulfate for the quick fix and sulfur for the long-term fix, because sulfur breaks down more slowly and is incorporated.
It takes its while to get through into the soil and to do the job. You know, it's gonna take months.
So you can use both. You know, you get that quick fix from the aluminum sulfate, and then the sulfur, and then you got to keep applying at regular intervals,
right,
during the year.
And the other thing is read your package, because when you're buying sulfur products, your percentage of your sulfur is extremely variable on what's offered across the counter.
Yeah,
the percentages are you know, there's a great distance between what percentage is stronger, lesser, you know, that type of thing.
You know, and that gets back to the other thing. And again, I hark back to, and by the way, 773-763-9278. You got a question for Wally? I got plenty of them. But give us a call if you want. Talking to this garden club the other day, you're talking about looking at numbers on the package, Wally. We had a great conversation in the room with the folks there about reading and following label directions, which seems really boring. And Carol, I hope you're listening.
What does that mean?
Oh, nothing, Carol. We'll talk later.
I know, I'm the worst.
Well, but, you know, you work here. I'm going to have it drummed into your brain eventually. Read and follow label directions. And I was telling these people, do you look at the label? Do you have any idea what the active ingredient is? If you know what the active ingredient is, do you have any idea what it does? You know, and that comes to additives and pesticides and fertilizers, just almost anything. It's like not knowing the name of your plant, not knowing even the genus of your plant. Look at the label. And once you know what's in there, then follow the directions carefully. Otherwise, you're messing around and it's not going to work the way you want it to. And perhaps you're going to cause real damage.
Yeah. And more is not better. That's one thing. And when you're working with your organic fertilizers, you know, also, and any organic curative for that matter, because it's got an organic label on it, does not necessarily mean it's 100% safe when you're using it.
No.
You have to, you know, use caution and precautions when you're applying any of that.
Mm-hmm. Toxic is toxic, okay?
Right.
Whether it's a natural toxin or it's a synthetic one. You know, pyrethrins come from chrysanthemums, and
they can be very, very toxic. The classic case is rotenone, very toxic substance, but it's very but it's natural.
Right, right. And some of these organics like rotenone, you're not going to find across the shelf any longer.
Right. Yeah, and that's good that some of these. I had a woman at that thing the other day that where I spoke. She still had what did she have? Diazinon. You know, and some people hold on to these things, and I said that's not legal anymore. You know, they don't sell that anymore. Although I think farmers can still use it. Am I wrong on that?
No,
it's gone completely. Okay.
You know, and a point to be taken: when you're purchasing chemicals like that, buy as much as you're going to need to use. Everybody has this thing where they're going to buy it by a quart; it's a little cheaper. And then it goes into the garage or a lawn shed. It sits there for a couple of years. It's hot. It's cold. It's settled. It's leaking. And that goes on and on. You have to, another thing, disposing of this. You know, it just doesn't get wrapped up and thrown in a garbage can. Find when your municipality has these disposal bays or where you can drop these products off so that you can, they're taken care of properly.
You know, that's a really good point you have to do your research on that. Don't throw it into the garbage because it ends up in a landfill, and you know landfills leach. And don't throw it down the toilet. Oh my gosh, no. You know, don't put it in the water supply. But you're right. Find out from your municipality when they have a hazardous waste disposal and do that. We're talking to Dr. Wally Schmidtke from Bertholdt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. Let's get to the second question, the second part of your homework, Wally, which was the Rose of Sharon. And we had, I think his name was Mark, last week, called in about Rose of Sharon. And he's growing a bunch of them, but they're starting to decline. And I didn't say it on the air, but what I wanted to say was, wow, you can't kill those things. What's happening here?
those plants are very, very durable, and they have a tendency of dropping a lot of seeds. It's easy to propagate little ones and hand them on to your neighbors, if you like. The thing that is going to bother a Rose of Sharon more than anything else is too wet a soil. And I don't know if he got specific on how the plant was looking, if it was just drying up and turning brown, or if it started to yellow and drop leaves.
And that's the other thing. I asked him to send me a photo, what's going on, so it would help with the diagnosis. And unfortunately, he said he didn't have a computer. Well, that makes it tough. I mean, unless you can see what's going on, it's really, really hard to diagnose, you know, and what I would advise you is go to a place like Bertholdt's where Wally's there. You bring it in a plastic bag. You seal it. Don't go spreading diseases and insects all over a garden center. Put it in a plastic bag, and then you can look at it because you've got one of those fancy-dancy microscopes.
Yeah, it makes it real easy to, when I put a specimen underneath this microscope, to find out what's really happening, if it's an insect, if it's a disease, a pathogen, if there's fungi hypea on the leaf or whatever. A good sample would be part of the plant that's expiring or dried up, along with part of the plant that's healthy, especially like with conifers, if they can snip off a branch that has some green and the end of the tips of it are turning brown and marginal. You know, a couple of samples from different areas of the plant and a good sealed bag or a jar. I've had customers come in here with shopping bags with poison ivy in them already. You want to be a little careful with that stuff. And certainly we don't need a lot of little critters jumping around here, you know.
You know, I mean, I'm trying to imagine the poison ivy because that urushiol can get on, which is the chemical in the poison ivy. It gets everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, you could probably have some on the outside of the bag, and then some poor unsuspecting guy is handling that stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you do with poison ivy? You just look at it and go, yep, that's poison ivy. Get it out of here.
Yes, especially. especially you want to, you know, not everybody's allergic to it, but certainly if you are, you got to be real careful. And like I say, and there are other plant materials too that can cause rashes with people. And they're, you know, I get some of that where they'll bring a vine in, and all of a sudden their arms are all broken out with something, or they, you know, with a dermatitis, or you know, type of burn.
And then blame
like
you, right?
Well, you know, what happened? Why did this cause this? You know, or whatever. Well, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way it is, and you know, and if you're working in your garden with areas where it's maybe questionable, where there are some vines that are poisonous, or if you're allergic to something, how about the old-fashioned long sleeves and a pair of garden gloves? You know, that's going to prevent a lot of problems before you have them.
And then what you do once you're done for the day, you take that shirt. If you're lucky, you just go right into the room where you have your washing machine, and you take the shirt off, and you take the gloves off, and you throw them in the laundry immediately, and don't throw it on another pile of clothes where some of that oil can rub off on something else. Just be really careful about that stuff.
And also clean off your pruners and your gardening tools.
Yes.
A little wipe, a little bleach solution.
Everything. You know, and have you been walking in it? Your shoes.
Sure.
Your pants. You know, if you're dealing with poison ivy, just be extra careful, because you could forget, and then you put your shoes on, you're tying your shoes, and you're exposing yourself to it again.
And another little common sense thing is when you're working with any kind of dusts, be it organic dusts or even dusty fertilizers and stuff, watch it when it's windy out. You know, the label has organic fertilizer, and here you toss it, and there's a big cloud of organic dust floating around. Well, it goes up your nose, and, you know, there's troubles. So you can get, you know, use some caution when you're gardening. A little common sense helps.
Common sense, you know, don't go spraying in the wind. Also, if you're going to, you know, for those of you who cannot live without your Roundup, be careful that you're not letting it drift into your neighbor's yard where it's going to do damage. Like several years ago, I had a guy a couple of doors down. I was growing some tomatoes next door in my neighbor's yard because she had some extra space and lots of sun. And I had a couple of earth boxes there. And the yard over had a bunch of morning glories. And the guy comes out and decides he's going to nuke them. And he just nuked them. And it drifted over into the next yard where my tomatoes were, and they all took a hit. It's like, really, dude? You can't do any better than that?
Yeah, it's kind of sad, and, you know, I get a lot of that where customers will bring in burn plant materials, and, well, let's put two and two together. When did this start happening? Well, it was last week when my lawn service was out, and they were spraying for weeds. Okay? Well, what happened? It's overdrift. You know, certainly these lawn services, if you watch, you know, a lot of people have them, but just watch how they apply that stuff and if it's windy or not.
All right, and I'm going to say something that's going to make me pretty unpopular with lawn services and landscapers who do lawn services. Ask questions. Ask them what they're using. You have a right to know. You're paying them, not the other way around. You know, my feeling, and they'll stall. A lot of them will just go, oh, you don't really need to know. Oh, it's perfectly safe. They'll just go blah, 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 blah. And what you need to say is, no, give me the name of the chemical so I can go look it up and decide whether this is good for my garden and my lawn.
Well, another real common thing that happens, and it happens quite frequently, I should say, is the fact that they'll put a fertilizer down, and then the homeowner figures, well, they put a little fertilizer down, I want to follow it up with a grass seed and thicken the lawn up some. Well, guess what? A lot of these fertilizers won't let grass seed germinate. So ask questions.
Yeah.
If it's a competent, you know, it's a good company, they're supposed to be able to answer them exactly and,
yeah,
you know, give you the proper information so that you know what's on your property. You know, how safe is it to go on? If it is, should I avoid it, walking on it, et cetera, et cetera?
Which tells you something as well. If they say, well, keep your dog and your kids off of there, Well, and then my question is, why are you applying that? Why would you want that on your lawn?
I always balk at that too, Mike. And the thing is, it's safe when after it's dry. I just question that.
Yeah, that's the other one. Yeah, don't worry. When it's dry, it's perfectly safe. Really? So should I grab a handful of grass and shove it in my mouth and see how well that tastes, how good that tastes, and what it might do? But getting back to the Rosa Sharon question, it's hard to know what the decline is. The University of Illinois Extension Service says that they don't get real specific here because, again, we don't know the exact conditions here. But they say that environmental damage can include drought and drowning and edema. And just like you said, Wally, too dry or too wet and can cause a problem. They also say that fungal diseases like gray mold, powdery mildew, and wood rots and decays. And as they put in parentheses here, many genus and species involved. So it's really hard to know unless you have a sample. So you can always take a sample to Wally. There are other great garden centers that will take samples like that. Bring in the wood. Wally makes a really good point, which is bring in some healthy and some diseased or insect affected. So we need to, so you can do a comparison. I think it was my buddy Dan Costa at Vern Growers in Hinsdale who said to me once, you know, people are, they're embarrassed to bring in the bad part, so they bring in the healthy part. And then you can't tell anything.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, with a plant that's dying, like this gentleman with the Rosa Sharon, what he could possibly do is if the plant's almost expired, is to dig up a little bit around the root system and bring in a little bit of soil to see if there is a pathogen, a fungal problem that causes like a cottony substance in the soil sometimes that can affect Rosa Sharon.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to see, you know, overwatering is real apparent right away as soon as somebody brings a plant in. People that grow plants in containers without drainage, what happened to my plant? Well, you lift it out, and boy, oh boy, there's an odor to that, and you know, you can just see the demise of the root system as it's just rotting away from lack of oxygen.
Yeah, that's another good point. Bring in a little of that soil around there and see what the deal is. All right, I'm late for a break here, Wally. Hang on, that's Dr. Wally Schmidtke from Bertholdt's Garden Center. When we come back, I want to talk about, give a preview of your presentation next week, which you're going to do next Sunday, a week from today, about your vegetable garden and what you should be thinking about for next year. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And a simple change in your lawn care practices this fall can create a carpet of green next spring. Speaking of safe, that's safe for children and pets. When the weather begins to cool, as it is very gradually right now, your lawn starts to build back its root system and needs extra nourishment. That's why experts agree that fall is the best time to fertilize your lawn. Most lawn fertilizers release their nutrients quickly. We're talking about synthetics here, which produces lots of clippings and reduces root growth. But Milorganite, an organic nitrogen fertilizer, feeds your lawn slowly throughout the fall, providing more green color with less clippings and maximum recovery from summer stress. It's a trick golf course superintendents have used for decades. Milorganite applied now will help your lawn green up faster in spring while helping it recover quickly from winter damage. You'll improve your lawn's overall health and greatly reduce weed problems. So give your lawn the food it needs. Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite, and that's spelled Milorganite, Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
It's that time of year, and gardeners know mum's the word. That's right. It's time to get a hold of your mum's ornamental peppers, pansies, snapdragons, all of your fall plantings. And Christy Weber's Farm and Garden Center is the place to go. Plant now for beautiful fall color, and be sure to get a hold of all your cool weather starts, kale, chard, lettuce, radishes, and more. Their tremendous perennial sale has been extended, and you can get a hold of Liatris, Salvia, Coreopsis, Astilbe, Hostas, and so many more, all 50% off now and beautiful color next year. Be sure to mark Christy Weber's Farm and Garden Center's upcoming Fall Harvest Festival on your calendar. Mark it down right now. September 28th and 29th with a petting zoo, mini maze, face painting, pansy potting. You can even build your own scarecrow. Follow Christy Weber Landscapes on Facebook or go to ChristyWeber.com to find out more. Christy Weber Landscapes, right in your own backyard.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure. You're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. This fall, you might see the needles dropping from your evergreens. Don't panic. It might be something as simple as fall needle drop, also known as normal needle drop. That makes sense. In autumn, many evergreens will drop older needles. On some evergreens, such as white pine or arborvitae, this process can be very dramatic, making the evergreen look like it's dying. To determine if your tree has a disease or is going through normal needle drop, check the location of the browning. Trees going through normal needle drop will have a fairly uniform brown appearance in the interior of the tree, since that's where the oldest needles are located. After a few weeks, the brown needles will fall off, leaving the tree looking normal and healthy. Trees with a disease may have brown needles in various areas of the tree, depending on the disease, but the appearance will not be as uniform as that of needle drop. If you're not sure, here's what you do. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your evergreens. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. Yes, I said free. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me up.
All together now.
Homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes. Where would I be without homegrown tomatoes? Are you singing, Wally?
You better believe it. I'm looking at purple tomatoes right now.
Oh, are you? What kind are they?
I think like maybe possibly the kind you sent me an email of.
Oh, yeah, I sent you, but I don't, it looks like a, it doesn't look like a purple tomato to me. Did you see the very end of that thing? It looked like a blueberry came out of a tomato plant or, you know, a little round fruit somehow.
Well, that's kind of interesting. I got my theory on it, and I'm working something up for you right now on it. So,
all right. Well, if you got it, send it to me and let me know. But meanwhile, we just have a couple of minutes here. So next week, you're going to be talking to people about putting their gardens to bed. And basically, you're talking veggie gardens, right?
Well, we're going to talk veggie gardens, but we're going to talk an overall across all gardening gardens for the fall, there's certain tricks you can do to put it to sleep. Adding organic content, we're going to review that. I'm going to review some problems people may have had in their vegetable gardens this year. We're going to have a Q&A session. I have a great following of folks around here that like to garden organically, and that's going to be what it's going to be based on. The products that I'm going to talk about are organic or natural, and like we're going to keep it on a get green, stay natural type of basis. That's one thing that we try to do over here. And also, I made sure that we're going to have all our products and amendments for the weekend will be discounted also. So
that's great. Great. And then, of course, people want you were telling me that you've got some ideas for supercharging your soil going into the winter for the spring.
Yeah, I've got a few little special techniques, and people if the folks can stop over, if you're going to put your beds to sleep for the winter, there's a few things that you should do and you shouldn't do. And one thing I just want to give everybody a quick advisement on is if you're going to rototill, do not powder your soil to death. Everybody gets that rototiller, they rent it once a year or whatever, and that's another one where more is not better. Turn it over real gently, and if you can, just do it with a fork.
You know, that's a really good point. If some people rototill twice a year religiously, and that's just nutty. If you know anything about the soil food web, you're pulverizing the soil food web. I mean, you know, you chop up worms for them, but think of the communities that have been established all summer or all winter in your soil by these microscopic critters and macroscopic as well, insects and as I said, worms and protozoa and bacteria, and they're all doing their jobs, and then you come along and you go and decide that you're going to pulverize it.
And so you have that nice lumpy clay soil in your garden, and all of a sudden you turn it into a fine powder. Well, guess what's going to happen after a couple of rains? As that soil settles, you took all the air pores out of it. It's going to look like a desert bottom that's dried up and cracked. Hmm. So you got to use some discretion when you're working with that rototiller.
Yeah. Well, I encourage people to go out to Bertholdt's next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Of course, Chris Wagner will be doing the design demo on Saturday. That's at throughout the day. And Sunday at 1 o'clock, Dr. Wally Schmidtke, put your veggie gardens to sleep, and you're also going to answer a lot of questions. I mean, it's not just that. If folks want to come in and just ask questions, you're going to handle that too, right?
Sure, absolutely.
And Bertholdt's is located at 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare. Look for the iconic windmill. Wally will be there pushing it. But he'll do it organically.
Right. Don't panic. It's organic.
Yeah, don't panic. And those are wise words to leave us with. Wally, thank you so much. You have a great Sunday, okay?
Thanks, Mike. Bye, Carol.
Well, look at that. Say goodbye, Carol.
Bye, Wally.
Bye-bye.
Have a good week.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Rick DeMaio weather in 30 seconds.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hey, pa, da 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 da, yeah.
Ha, hey.
Cardeon scale buco. What's the rumpus?
Well, I hope that woke some of you up on a Sunday morning. Rick, did it wake you up?
It was either that or the strong northeast winds and the waves bashing against the shoreline, Mike.
Well, see, I don't have that because I'm not by the lake the way you are. So, it didn't seem like it was that windy this morning when I went out.
No, it wasn't. It was kind of like a slow progression from a non-windy start to the day to kind of a windy morning. But let me ask you real quickly, what was exactly that you were playing?
That is, I actually dug up one of my Sheffield Garden Walk CDs that Lori Lewis always brings, and that's Gaelic Storm. They appear there often, and it's a song called What's the Rumpus?
What's the Rumpus?
What's the Rumpus? Yeah, listen. Go. There we go. What's the Rumpus?
Almost sounds like something my Ukrainian grandma would say when she came into the room and we're all fighting. She would go, What's the Rumpus?
That's a great word. And you know what? That's a great phrase. We don't use that phrase enough anymore. What's the rumpus?
Yeah, it was, I don't know. It's kind of one of, definitely one of those terms that kind of goes on for a long time.
Yeah. But it continues to go on for a long time. See, there's my little segue. Fairly warm weather right now and fairly dry weather in the area.
Yeah. And you know what? It's amazing because when you think about all the rain that we could have had around here in the last 2 weeks with these warm fronts and cold fronts coming through, we've gotten very little. In fact, when you really look at the amount of rainfall that has come through the Midwest, how much we've actually missed here in the Chicagoland area, it has actually been, almost 3 to 4 inches of rain in parts of right around generally the I-80 area to about I-88 west to about the Moline region. And then you look at parts of Iowa, it's really amazing, Mike. Just within the last week and a half, nearly 50 to 60% of the entire state of Iowa is now under severe drought. And we generally look at five levels of drought. The next one from severe is extreme. So when you're at severe drought and you think of how much agriculture is in Iowa and northern Missouri, 25% of the state is now under severe drought. Remember how much rainfall we were talking about, what that area of the United States was getting back in spring. It's amazing when you look at how quickly it's dried out. And then you go even further west into parts of Nebraska and Kansas, and nearly 75% of that region is under extreme drought. And it kind of makes sense that we've had a couple of days above 95, last week, or I should say the week before last week. And then this past week, every day that we've had a cold front come through, the return fall on the backside has been incredibly warm. I mean, just think about it. Friday, we had temperatures in the mid-70s, I should say a Thursday, and then right back in the mid-80s on Friday and upper 80s on Saturday. Here we have this one cold front come through today, and we're right back up into near 90, maybe even the mid-90s on Tuesday.
Wow.
So the drought out to the west of us has an extreme effect, an extreme direct impact on how quickly we can warm up, which for this time of the year, you're talking about sun angle, generally right around the 5th or 6th or 7th of September, being very similar to about the 5th or 6th or 7th of April. And that's pretty extreme to get this warm this quickly.
That's amazing. And I've had people write to me in the last several weeks. Every now and then somebody goes, should we be worried about this drought? And it sounds like people in Iowa should be at the moment.
Yeah, people in Iowa, I still even think people here in parts of northern Illinois, because it was interesting. I was walking around Evanston yesterday, and I saw someone had laid down all this new sod out in front of their house. And I'm thinking, I don't think this was a good time to put completely new sod down. September is typically a fairly dry time of the year, and the pattern has been somewhat dry. And I know it'll be good for the farmers once they begin to harvest things, but have you also noticed the number of trees, or I should say the increasing number of trees, that seem to be losing their leaves? And I know there's been the emerald ash borer problem coming through parts of the area, but the trees just don't look as healthy as they did last year, the year before.
Yeah, no, I'm what I think I've been noticing is the effects of this dry weather as we get to the end of the summer, because the trees get a little scorched.
Right.
And they just don't look quite as good as we prepare to go into the fall. And I'm sure it has something to do with the rain.
Oh, yeah. The rainfall, and obviously, still, we talked about this before, some of the lingering effects of last year. And speaking, Mike, about how human intervention becomes part of climate, the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society just recently issued their State of the Climate 2012. And within that, part of them and then part of NOAA, actually the NOAA article was published in the AMS, basically 18 different research teams from around the country reviewed 12 extreme events, weather events, natural events, if you want to call them that, that occurred last year, basically all of them pretty much weather related, at least 90% of them all had at least some impact heightened by human intervention, whether that was offset of warming of the atmosphere, warming of the oceans, maybe making water vapor, maybe making hurricanes a little bit more intense, or encroaching on, you know, the natural border of oceans and shoreline, you know, the encroachment of public, you know, landfall and the population moving towards oceans where you never had to worry about, you know, a Category 1 hurricane, i.e. Sandy, producing a 10 to 15 storm surge. It was really interesting when this article came out. It really made us think more about our future in the short term of what we can expect when we get into these hyperactive weather seasons. Right now, this one has been fairly unhyper, if you want to call it non-hyper. We've had very little in the way of any hurricane, and we can cross our fingers for that. But overall, when you get into these hyperactive seasons, the chances of it becoming catastrophic is obviously increasing, mainly due to human involvement.
Maybe give me a minute or so about that quiet hurricane season right now.
You know, it's amazing. We had barely a cup of coffee with our Tropical Storm Gabrielle, which formed off the southwest part of the Caribbean. And it looked like it was going to become a tropical storm. It had some length to it, some intensity to it. It basically fizzled out after 24 hours. And just looking at maps globally, Mike, there is nothing going on in the West Pacific, nothing going on in the Atlantic, and nothing going on over in far the southeast sections of Asia.
Wow.
Very unusual for this time of year, and it looks like it's going to stay that way at least for the next 5 days. Not to say that you can't get a rogue Cat 4 or Cat 5 between now and the end of October, but typically the 10th, 12th of September is when we're typically at our peak, and it's just not there.
The calm before the storm.
Yeah, but we'll just say this is one of those years where it looks like things are just going to remain somewhat quiet. We'll take our lucky stars.
I think that's great. So give us a forecast.
Yeah, okay. So obviously the clouds are in today, mid-70s today, and then the warm front roars back through the area tomorrow, near 90 Monday. Get this, mid-90s Tuesday. We could be breaking records by then, and then it looks like some drier weather continues with cooler temperatures for Wednesday through Friday. But next week when we talk, Mike, we're still going to be talking about the persistent dry weather and above normal temperatures continuing for September 2013.
So you don't see any rain in the short term?
If we get anything, it's probably not going to be enough to make a dent in the dry conditions, and probably less than a half inch. So something that we need, we're definitely not going to get.
Go figure. Wow. What a strange year.
Yeah, okay. Very much so.
Yeah. All right, Rick, you have a wonderful Sunday. Don't get blown into the lake.
And I'll send you that article. I think it'll be good reading. We could talk more about it next week.
All right. That sounds great. Please do. I'll talk to you then. Rick DeMaio with a meteorologist extraordinaire with the forecast. Always a pleasure to have him on the show. In the second hour, we are going to talk about farmers. Where are they coming from? Which is an important question. And I don't know that we'll solve it, but at least we're going to delve into that very thing.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
What was that again? Hi day, hi day. Okay. Welcome back to the second big hour of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And you know, I needn't have been so concerned, Carol. Carol, they didn't descend on me and crowd me completely out of the studio here. We have only three folks. But we are going to get on the phone, Mike Sands.
Mike,
right?
Sands on the phone, and I guess there was a family that came.
Let me welcome Allison Parker from left to right as you look at your stereo radio screens. Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm, Sherry Doyle of Angelic Organics Learning Center, Farmer Training Initiative, and Chris Pershall of Trogs Hollow CSA. Have I got that all right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That's all the time we have. Good night, everybody. It's great to have you guys here. Thank you all for coming down. The reason they're here is because we're at that time of year. It's interesting. As we get into the harvest season here in the upper Midwest, I guess it's also farmer training season, isn't it, Sherry?
Yes, definitely. We start our State Line Farm Beginnings course in October each year, and that runs through March and the classroom portion. And that works really well because then the participants can launch into their mentorships and their growing season learning plan from March through September.
So the idea is you get them in the classroom, you stick them in the classroom for a few months, and then the weather warms up, and all right, now we throw you out in the field, and you got to get going.
Exactly. Hopefully they're really inspired after spending all that time indoors.
I would think so. They're champing at the bit and growing roots in the bottom of their shoes because they need to get outside.
Right.
But that does make sense because if you're going to teach people about this, put them right to work. And Chris, you're nodding because you went through the Farm Beginnings program.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago we went through that, my wife and I. And we had already started our farm at that point, but it was a good thing just to get us that kick in the butt that we needed. And like you said, in the spring, get us out the door and expand and keep going.
Well, okay, I got to ask you, at the beginning of the show, I read some statistics about farmers. I don't know if you heard that on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of depressing, actually, that the average age of the farmer is 57 years old.
Yep.
And that there are three times as many farmers over 65 as there are under 35. Now, mm-hmm. Chris, you're under 35.
No, 38, but close 38. Enough.
Oh, you don't qualify. Allison?
I'm 33.
Hey, you make it. my goodness. Oh, thank God we got somebody young in here. Oh, you're 38. You know, you're over
there. I started under 35, though.
Okay, good.
So I fit that way.
That's a really good point. And that's my question, and it's addressed to you, both you, Chris, and Allison. And Chris, we'll start with you. What in the world makes someone decide to be a farmer in the 21st century?
Oh, my great-grandmother did. I grew up in her gardens in Chicago here, sitting there picking things off the plants, eating them right there. And even though I went to school, university, and I was working a different job, I could just never get away from it. I think the big thing that pushed me over is that my wife and I moved to Glasgow, Scotland for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no fresh produce. And so we tried to grow, not for the first time, but we tried to grow in Glasgow, which is really far north. Not cold, but not enough sun. And when we moved home, it was every year our garden just kept getting bigger because we didn't ever want to be at a point where we didn't have our own fresh produce anymore. And that's where we kind of went when we had too much to give away. We started selling it. And I was able to.
And where were you living when you came back?
Oh, Elgin, just outside of the city here.
And how much property did you have there?
We started on an eighth of an acre. In our
was
backyard.
That just your backyard?
Just our backyard in the city of Elgin. And that's where we started selling from. We were 7 blocks off the river in the city, not out, you know, out in a big field somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But we started out in our backyard. And, that's right after that first year, we started in State Line and were able to make contacts and then expand a little more with some rental land.
So, I'll get to you in a second, Allison, about that. But let's get back to State Line for a second, because we're gonna mention a number of different initiatives here today, they all do slightly different things. In fact, we'll get to Mike in a second. But how did you learn about State Line Farm Beginnings, and what made you think this was a program for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. We had.
It's actually a pretty simple question. I mean, that's the softball question here.
I think it was basically we had done some programs at the Learning Center already, and we were looking to to get a little more experience and get some teaching on basically, is this a good idea and are we going to be able to do this for a living? And so, in fact, the first year before we started the business, we applied and there were too many applicants. And so we started the business anyway and started selling. And then the next year we got in the middle of our first season. And it was, how did we find out? By going to Angelic Learning Center to do other things and just continuing from there. Yeah, we did made a big effort to go and talk to other farmers anywhere in the Chicagoland area that were doing small vegetable farms to ask them about the program as well. So that helped push us there. But it was basically stumbling onto the program through doing other events at the Learning Center.
All right. And Sherry, tell me what happens when farmers get into Stateline Farm Beginnings.
Well, one of the strengths of our program is that it is farmer-led. And so what they get access to right away are a series of people that have gone before them that have had varying levels of success and can tell their story very specifically. Like they can share their cash flow statements and explain how they built that. They can share how they financed that first year.
You're really laying it all out there then. I mean, that's a lot of transparency to lay out your cash statements and say, this is how I'm doing it. Because you opened yourself up to constructive criticism, but it is criticism, possibly.
Sure. It's true, and it's actually one of the reasons I love facilitating the class is because I'm constantly impressed with people's generosity, with how the farmers come in and talk about the mistakes they've made so that the new farmers don't necessarily have to make those same mistakes. And they talk about how they very creatively chose their product mix, chose their market channels. And so that's really the strength of the program. And that's what the people get when they first come in, because each session, it meets roughly every other Saturday throughout the course of the winter. And each session features at least one experienced farmer, if not up to three or four, talking about how they've done it.
Okay, now the question is for you, Chris. You couldn't get in the first season. You went ahead with the business anyway. You got in the next year.
Right.
And when you got into Stateline Farm Beginnings, after already being up and running, what made you go, holy cow, I wish I had been here a year earlier?
You know, it was, like Sherry said, opening up the financial statements and pushing the business plan aspect of the class. I'd been growing my whole life. You know, like I said earlier, I was in my great-grandmother's garden. But actually having to put that business plan together, or at least model one together, and seeing Alex and Allison come in and talk, and talking with them about how they were able to do this and, you know, what are we looking at as far as expenses and what should we plant and how much? Because it's that expansion, those first few years getting your feet in the ground and that expansion and knowing, you know, how much are we going to need to have money-wise and how are we going to get this land together? That's something that I don't know if we missed that the first year of the business, but that was the essential part for us, is that business aspect of these are the books, this is what everybody's doing. Everybody's doing it different, and we've all made mistakes, and here, we'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
That was the big thing.
We have in the studio, that's Chris Pershall of Trogs Hollow CSA. Where does the name Trogs Hollow come from?
A friend in college gave our band that name, and it didn't stick with the band, but it stuck with me. And then when we started doing this, Marcy said, "Let's use that name. It's a good farm name."
I like it.
Yeah,
it's a great name. Sherry Doyle from Angelic Organics Learning Center is here, and Allison Parker of another name I like, Radical Root Farm. And let's go to you. And as we go to you, I want to bring in Mike Sands, who's the founding executive director at the Liberty Prairie Foundation, currently senior associate. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
And the reason I'm bringing you in is because, unlike Chris and his wife Marcy, Allison and her husband Alex went a slightly different route. They didn't take the Stateline Farm Beginnings program
Instead, they worked with the Prairie Crossing Farm and the Farm Business Development Center at Prairie Crossing Farm. Allison, I'm going to talk to you first. How was that experience with you? And then perhaps we can talk about how these two programs complement each other.
Sure.
Let me ask you, first of all, why did you want to get into farming? You're under the magical 35-year-old limit, okay?
My husband and I, we were sort of working different jobs. He was working in a restaurant, and I was doing a program called the Environmental Corps. And we got sort of really interested just in food issues and access to food issues, and on top of that, I was doing a lot of environmental work and seeing huge issues with just the practice of organic farming and the lack of, especially in this area. We were really interested in the Midwest and near Chicago. And I was also doing a lot of writing at that time. I was doing some freelance work with various food issues, and we just got really interested in it and decided, well, let's just go see, let's work on some farms and see how we like it. And so we did several internships.
Where did you intern?
We interned in Texas.
Why Texas?
Well, my family's originally from Texas, so okay. We were actually there for a little while. And then Wisconsin. After that, we just kind of decided, well, let's see if we could do this as a business and as mm-hmm. a job and have a CSA of our own. And so we tried it, and thanks to the Farm Business Development Center at Prairie Crossing, it was pretty pivotal that was where we landed, just because neither Alex or I come from farming backgrounds. We had no, access to land anywhere. So
here we have the opposites. We have a person who had a background, grown his whole life, and mm-hmm. you had none of that.
Right, right. Yeah.
And how much of an obstacle did that prove to be?
If it hadn't been for Prairie Crossing and the access that provided us, I don't see how we could have done it, because that allowed us to rent the land, rent all the infrastructure and the equipment, for which we have none of. And also we didn't have really anyone. Our families both were both like, well, what are you guys doing? Or, they didn't really understand what we wanted to do. And
I have to admit, I might have the same kinds of questions.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like, excuse me, what are you doing?
Uh-huh.
Did you get that at a few Thanksgiving dinners?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, people really, our families really just did not understand. And now, like, my parents are part of our CSA program, and they're our biggest supporters, but it took years for them
that's all you have to say is mom, dad, don't worry about it, you're going to get fresh vegetables
right.
every
right.
weekend.
Yeah, all right? It's an education process for sure.
Yeah. So let's go to Mike Sands talk about how you can help these young pups who have no experience and no land. I mean, what is it that the Farm Business Development Center does in drawing in these people?
Well, I think, going back to your initial question about farm, the age of farmers increasing over time and kind of, frankly, depressing numbers in the farm sector about the rural population and farm numbers, there is one small bright spot, and that is that the one category in the USDA numbers that are increasing are the small farm numbers and the kind of more entrepreneurial folks that are getting into farming. And it's really a different demographic, and the two, both Chris and Allison and Alex, represent this new demographic. They're typically people who come from, they have some experience potentially growing. They have a relative, maybe a grandmother or a grandfather, but they don't come off of really active working farms. But they're typically very bright, typically very entrepreneurially focused. And what they need is just a little bit of support to get over that hump. And if you look at the history of where these people, how these people have gotten to where they are in most cases, is they have started by working on other farms, either as apprentices or as people just simply working on farms and maybe kind of working up through to the extent where they may even be a farm manager or something. But then they need to take this kind of giant step. And there are two major hurdles that they face at that point. And I think the partnership between the Farm Business Development Center and State Line Farm Beginnings really addresses that. The first, and Sherry already addressed this, and your young farmers have addressed this, is the sitting down and actually getting a plan put together. A lot of us like to go do things, whether it's farming or something else, and we often kind of dive in potentially without much of a plan in terms of putting things down on paper and getting numbers in place and starting to look at options. And the farm business or the State Line Farm Beginnings year-long course really does that. So they come out of that with a business plan, and the depth of that business plan varies, obviously. But they have something. The second major challenge is having access to all of the infrastructure, including land, that farming requires. And those can represent huge capital costs. The premise behind the Farm Business Development Center is an attempt to postpone those capital investments as long as possible and convert them to, in essence, variable costs. So people like Alex and Allison come to the farm, they lease land, they lease tractor time, they lease space in a greenhouse, in a production greenhouse, they lease space in coolers, they have access to the resources they need, but at a scale that they can actually both pay for and handle. If you were in a manufacturing business, you wouldn't expect to buy a 50,000 square foot warehouse and production facility if you were in the first year only going to use 10,000 square feet. But in farming, often you have to if you're going to buy land. So they come in, they work for a couple of years. Our kind of mantra is 5 years, up to 5 years, up to 5 acres. And at that point, they are at a place where they can often move on to a larger, more independent situation.
And right now, Allison, are you on your own land?
Yeah. So what's happened to us is we've gotten an opportunity, thanks to Prairie Crossing and to the Farm Business Development Center and an organization called Conserve Lake County, where we're actually on a historic farm that was saved by Conserve Lake County. Basically, it's a conservation organization. And we have a long-term lease with them now, which makes us have like a pretty stable, you know, pretty permanent place to farm now, which is pretty perfect for us because we are still renting everything because we wouldn't really have been able to afford to buy at this point. But we have the security of the lease where now we know we can, you know, plant our perennials and be much more stable and secure where we are now. So we're really excited.
Now, how's it that you guys work together, Sherry, you and Mike and Angelic Organics Learning Center working with Prairie Crossing?
We have a long history of working together. Most recently, in 2009, we applied for a USDA grant under the Beginning Farmer Rancher Development Program. And there are three partners in that grant, Prairie Crossing, Angelic Organics Learning Center, and Michael Fields Agricultural Institute in Wisconsin. And so, we're going through two cycles now of that grant, which is sizable and has helped us to collaborate even more closely and to provide services for not just brand new farmers, but farmers through year 10 of startup, which is how the USDA defines a beginning farmer. And so that's sort of the recent glue between our organizations. But previously, it made a lot of sense for the Learning Center and our Farmer Training Initiative that focuses on sort of business planning for farms, and for Prairie Crossing Farm Business Development Center that focuses on land access, to partner together, because like Mike said, two of the biggest challenges for new farmers are land access and capital and financing.
And Mike Sands, I know that I suspect that a number of people, when you mention Prairie Crossing, they're not thinking of your farm business development center. They're thinking of those crazy hippies up in Gray's Lake who are...
they're well-heeled hippies, though.
Right. Yeah. Well-heeled hippies. Yeah, because I can't afford to live there. So, right. But, you know, you think of the sustainable community. How big a part is the Farm Business Development Center, and how does that work with your community there?
It's part of a large, as you point out, the part of a larger picture. In the original design of Prairie Crossing as a conservation community, from the very beginning, we envisioned the importance of local food production and organic farming in that context. The Farm Business Development Center is not a program of the Homeowners Association or have any direct connection to that other than proximity. But it does add to the sense of sustainability in the larger community, in that we're actually not only producing food but producing new farmers. And the community is a market for those farmers. I mean, many of the beginning farmers, I know Alex and Allison, as well as some of the other farmers, sell, have members in their CSAs or sell at markets that are frequented by Prairie Crossing residents.
In the studio, we have Chris Purcell of Trogs Hollow Farm, Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm, Sherry Doyle of Angelic Organics Learning Center on the phone, Mike Sands with the Liberty Prairie Foundation, also Prairie Crossing. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I need to take a short break. I've got some interesting things I want to throw at you about growing. Got a real nice tweet from Rob Carthol, and something you guys might want to think about. He says, farmers may be getting older. Do you suppose that the younger generation is more heavily biased toward organics, which I think is a pretty good question. If anybody has a question about this, you want to be a farmer? 773-763-9278. You ask some questions, or if you've got comments about this, give us a holler. 773-763-9278, and we'll be right back with our guest. But first, I want to let you know, and I told you about it in the first hour, that Bertolt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village says it's time to change up your planters, landscapes, and decorate your homes and businesses. They're celebrating with a fall open house next weekend, September 13th, 14th, and 15th. Pumpkins. I know how to pronounce pumpkins, corn stalks, Indian corn, straw, scarecrows, and a great selection of fall decor are all waiting for you. Or how about mums, pansies, fall accent plants, and beautifully mixed planters, all reasonably priced? Check out their Monster Mums, planted in bushel baskets, and lots more in the store are on sale. Chris Wagner, as we mentioned before, one of the senior flower designers, will present demos on fall planting and decorating throughout the day on Saturday, September 14th. And on Sunday, September 15th at 1 o'clock p.m., Dr. Wally Schmidtke will present a seminar, Put Your Veggie Gardens to Sleep, based on an organic approach, there's that word again, on winterizing your gardens. And he will address problems you may have encountered through the growing year, followed by a question and answer session. That's next week.
weekend at Bertolt's Fall Open House. Bertolt's Garden Center is located at 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front or go to bertoltsgardencenter.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Oh, my goodness. You know, that is the biggest darn camera I have ever seen. No, wait, that's an iPad or something.
It's just a tablet.
It's just a tablet. See, I don't even know what's out there anymore.
I'm on Facebook putting all this up while we're going.
And I noticed that. I was noticing here earlier on Twitter, Radical Root Farm followed me. Mm-hmm. It's about time.
Good job, Allison.
What is it? Really? She's got her peeps out there. Is somebody tweeting right out there in the green room?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, is that you?
No.
No, you're not doing it. But
my husband's at market. He might be doing it.
Oh, so he's not even here.
Yeah. So
he's got work to do.
Yeah, right. He does.
Okay. And I'm going to ask a question based on my next spot here, too, in a second. And that's good advice from D. Landreth Seed Company. The growing season is far from over, especially if you like onions, elephant garlic, and shallots. Any of you guys getting some of that stuff in the ground?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now's
garlic.
The time
now's
to do
the
it.
Time. Yep, garlic.
Yeah, well, maybe I should get some advice from you before you get out of here. All of these root vegetables can be planted in the fall for a midsummer crop. Many of them can also be planted in the spring for a late autumn or early winter crop. Onions are one of the most important homegrown crops available for cultivation today, and they're easy to grow. I know, I've done it myself. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Onions are classified as long day, short day, and midday varieties. These classifications refer to the extent of daily sunlight required to make the onion grow into a sizable bulb. We got it so far? Is that what we're talking about? All right. All right. You don't have to comment. Short day onions require short day. Midday are flexible and can tolerate a range of day length, and long day onions need the long days of summer to produce bulbs. Most home gardeners should choose midday onion varieties, but those gardeners in the South, and a few of you might be listening to this show, who are planting onion sets in the fall, should select short day onion varieties. Landreth Seeds, in business since the American Revolution, has a great selection of heirloom onions, garlic, and shallots. Find out at LandrethSeeds.com or go to their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800, you can do it right now, 654-2407, 800-654-2407, D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784. I think this is the perfect song for you guys right now because it's, of course, called No Rain. And that's kind of something you guys have been dealing with right now. So tell me, as a new... my guests here. I have Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm and Chris Partial of Trogs Hollow CSA. Sherry Doyle from Angelic Organics Learning Center is here. And Mike Sands is on the phone from the Liberty Prairie Foundation. And let's start with you, Allison. What's been like the last couple of months trying to deal with the weather and the lack of rain?
Yeah, I think lack of rain always stresses out a farmer.
Well, okay, and I got to add, you know, when you think of farms, and I think we think of the mega farms, that Oh, you just pull out your big long rain or your irrigation system and you just turn that sucker on, right? Have you got anything like that?
We are lucky at La Prairie Crossing to have an irrigation well, which not all farmers do, but we do have access to that. The incubator farmers do. So especially last year, that was extremely helpful. It's always when things get really dry out there, then that's when we start to irrigate using that.
And how do you irrigate? What is it? What's the method?
We have pipe irrigation. So that's basically just long pipes that you lay on the ground and it sprays water. So we'll rotate them to
and
different
areas. And you're pumping it out of the well.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So...
And Chris, what about you? How have you been dealing with this?
Well, last year was our first year that we ever had to irrigate.
You picked a good year to start farming, didn't you? Or the last couple of years.
Yeah, flooding one year and then the dryness. Last year, that was our big expense. We went out and got a drip irrigation system for one of our fields. And that's the same idea where we run pipes out and then drip lines all the way down the beds that just trickle out water. And that really helped. That kept the things going that needed.
But I imagine these are the kinds of things that the experienced farmers talk to you about, tell you that you're going to need this. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sherry, I would assume that the your organization helps facilitate the purchase of these or at least gets information, tells your new farmers how to get this done and, you know, how to bankroll it.
Yes, we the farmers that come to the class and talk about what they do certainly stress the importance of thinking ahead in terms of irrigation. And in terms of planning for that financial, that, you know, money output, that that comes in a couple different ways. Obviously, the instruction talks about how to plan for that in your budget. But then, in addition, we are working on launching something that mimics an IDA or an individual development account where farmers save money and then we fundraise to find match funds for that money. And the types of purchases that they would be making after saving money for a period of time would be for things like irrigation systems or tractors. And so it's one of the ways in which we're looking to support farmers that have already launched but need a little incentive to save money and plan for the future.
I mentioned that we might take a phone call. Mike, you're still with us on the line, right?
Correct.
All right, I'll get to you in a second, but I want to go to Rick on, let's see if I can. There we go. Rick on line two, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Morning, guys. I know your guests are more directed at the business end of farming, and I can certainly appreciate that. I'm trying to raise my own stuff, and I'm hoping to have enough to be able to share with my neighbors, but I went to a class, I was on organic farming, and so the question is, they said to spread out gypsum and lime as food for the plants, but isn't that like fertilizer? I mean, does that still stay within organic guidelines?
Yes.
in a word?
Yeah, you can get, as long as you're careful of your source, but yeah, I don't know. It kind of depends on your soil. I mean, in my opinion, I don't think just spreading gypsum and lime on any soil is a good idea. I think probably you'd want to get it tested first to see if you really need that. Mm-hmm.
They're both types of calcium,
right?
One is used for, different kinds. I mean, each is used for a different kind of soil. So it seems to me, like you said, you would need to do a soil test and decide, do I need the dolomitic calcium or do I need gypsum?
Right. Yeah. I mean, something that we do, we had a field of tomatoes that had a lot of blossom end rot, which is it's this indicator that your soil is lacking calcium. So we did end up adding gypsum to that area. But otherwise, I mean, yeah, it kind of just depends on what your soil needs.
Chris, did you want to? Oh, go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, thank you. So test the soil before we start adding stuff to it. So one other thing they suggested, and it, because plants do need food, they're suggesting that we spray, get this, cola, like RC or Coca-Cola on the and that's supposed to help them get more of what they need. And like, I wouldn't put that in my body. Why would I put it on my body?
That sounds gross.
Well, where are you getting your advice? That's what I want to know.
Hey guys, that's why I thought I'd better ask. You know? All right.
Chris, did you want to make a comment?
You know, I don't know as much about the organic chemicals as Allison would. Our farm, we try to keep everything off our food. So there are guidelines for
what do you mean by that? You try to keep everything
just
up.
Like my grandmother. Our policy is that we don't spray or put anything on the food that is not from the animals or the air already. Just like my great grandmother did. I've got the four kids, and our big idea is we want them to be able to walk in the field and eat whatever they want off of the plants in the field, and not ripping on organic methods or anything, but there are chemicals that are organic that are poisonous.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier in the show.
We don't use the really strong
chemical.
Yeah, we got toadstools, hemlock, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Different,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Well, Rick, you've opened up an interesting line of conversation. I'm going to pursue it. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Awesome show.
I appreciate that. Bye-bye. And he does bring up a really good point, and Mike, you can jump in if you want, but are there different types of organics? It seems to me that you can use whatever you think, you know, whatever. What are your personal beliefs about that? And where do you train and where do you learn and what do they teach you?
For our farm, I mean, we really focus on soil health. So we really make sure that the soil is as healthy as possible, and that soil creates the healthiest plants possible. So if you create a really good soil structure, like we use a really good compost, and we do... you know, we'll do some trace minerals that really will bulk up the plants and make them, you know, really nutrient rich. And we try to create as many micronutrients as possible in our food. And that's something that, you know, that we really believe in doing for our farms.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just, as a kind of follow up to Allison's work comments, just to be clear, organic is a very specific set of guidelines. To be certified organic, there are very specific do's and don'ts. Someone like Alice, the Radical Root, as a certified organic operation, actually has to maintain very detailed records submit those as a plan each year, and then has an actual inspection. So there are lots of things out there that people say. Cola, as an example, is not something that I think is in the National Organic Standards recommendation. So there are specific things, and the focus, as Allison says, is to really bolster the whole ecosystem. So most additions in the system focus on building the soil system and then having the soil feed the plants, then the soil microbial systems feed the plants, not feeding the plants directly with chemical inputs.
Well, that is the whole soil food web philosophy, is that you feed the organisms that feed your plants, and we talk about that on the show. And I didn't realize that Allison, you were certified organic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, yours is not.
Correct.
But Mike, the point is that more and more there are farmers out there who use organic methods even though they don't get certified.
Correct.
And I think some of them do it because they feel like to get the certification, you got to jump through hoops of fire. And they feel like, no, I'll grow healthy stuff. I'm not going to say it's certified organic. I'm just going to say we use organic techniques. And aren't more and more farmers doing that?
I think there are, as a percentage of the new farmers and farmers, yes, there are probably more farmers doing that. In terms of total numbers, there's absolutely no question that certified organic is also growing very rapidly. So, you know, that it's a reflection of the growth in both sectors. The critical piece... No, I just lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
Well, I can say a critical piece.
Okay.
one part about choosing to be certified organic or not is often motivated through your marketing.
Right.
So
right.
if you're going to be selling directly face-to-face at a farmer's market, many new farmers opt not to certify because they develop a more of a personal relationship with their customers and the trust is developed that way. If you're selling through to grocery stores or to restaurants and even sometimes with a CSA where there's a connection to the grower, but maybe not as face-to-face as it is at a farmer's market, then oftentimes growers will opt to go through the certification process to get that validation that their customers need to develop the trust through the certification.
And what I would ask Chris Parshall, whether you find that not being certified organic has hurt your business in any way.
I don't feel it has. We, like Sherry just said, we talk to our customers one-on-one, and they know exactly how we grow. We are following organic methods wherever we can. We just don't use the chemicals. And as far as our CSA, all of those customers are told right up front how we grow, and they know how we grow. And I think it's exactly what you said. The personal contact is what makes it acceptable so that people know. But definitely selling to bigger places or where you don't have that personal contact, that's where the certified is a good advantage.
By the way, we got a tweet from David Zaber up in Wisconsin, and he's a he knows his stuff, and this is actually directed, I think, towards Rick, who called in earlier. He writes, gypsum can be contaminated. Be careful. So,
Yeah, know your source for sure.
Exactly. So thank you, David, for that. All right, we need to take another break here. Again, you're welcome to jump in, 773-763-9278. I'm going to kind of take us a stream, a little bit a stream. And the other thing is we haven't really talked about craft yet. I want to, and everybody in the studio is nodding. That's the Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training, and how that fits into all this equation. And we will do that with our guests, Chris Parshall of Trogs Hollow, Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm, Sherry Doyle, Angelic Organics Learning Center, and Mike Sands. We've got a lot of folks here from Liberty Prairie Foundation, all on the Mike Novak Show. Now, you probably didn't know this, but there are only 53 shopping days until Halloween.
Oh, man.
I did the math yesterday, and that's the only math I'm capable of doing. And if you don't have the perfect Halloween gift for that someone special, may I recommend a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. This magazine is terrifyingly good. In the September-October issue, the great Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus, covers a topic that every homeowner seems to encounter sooner or later. What are the top small ornamental trees that you can use if your yard is space challenged? I'm going to give you some names to intrigue you. Firebird crab apple, Seabold maple, seven sunflower, Cornelian cherry, fringe tree, maidenhair tree, which is really a small ginkgo. Yes, there are small ginkgos now. Who knew? And pawpaw. I want a pawpaw. I'm just saying. I want. And you're nodding, Allison. Do you, have some of those?
That's something that we're planting as pawpaw trees.
Yeah, I want a pawpaw. Yeah. and then there's my column on the inside back page. In honor of Halloween, my editor would like to make it disappear. Too late. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from The Care of Trees. Guess what? It's still dry out there, as far as your plants are concerned. So you need to keep your trees and shrubs hydrated as we go into the fall. To reduce the risk from a shortage of water, watch for signs of moisture stress, such as wilting leaves. It is more effective to prevent moisture stress than fix it after the fact. Use a soaker hose or oscillating sprinkler. Trees like to be deeply watered and then allow the soil to mostly dry out before watering again. Here are some guidelines. Water 1 or 2 inches of water per week. It depends on the temp. We're probably at the 1 inch. But as Rick DeMaio said, we're going to have 90s this week. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Go figure. Here we are. Well, it does happen in September occasionally. Anyway, 5 minutes per inch of trunk diameter. It can be a rule of thumb. Water the area under the tree canopy, meaning, you know, out to the tree canopy. If you've got an established tree, a mature tree, you don't need to do it right at the base. That's for young trees. But an established tree, take it out to the canopy, the edge of the canopy. If using an oscillating sprinkler, place the sprinkler next to the tree, tree trunk so that it sprays outward, and set the sprinkler so that the water does not hit the trunk. When one side is watered, move the sprinkler to the other side of the trunk. And remember that too much water can be just as harmful as not enough water. Contact a certified arborist at The Care of Trees for your tree needs. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davy company. Their business is people and their love for trees. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I love it when John Lennon just starts just doing the classics there. And in the studio, we have a bunch of people. We don't have that much time left, but we got a couple of calls. So let's go right to that. And is that Dan on the line two, Carol? Don, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Yes, good morning.
Good morning. I always hear you talk about the different fruit trees and everything.
Yeah.
Native to this area and to Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Michigan, besides pawpaws, persimmons. And they have a very sweet plum-tasting fruit on them. And I've got pawpaws, and they're delicious.
but you wanted to strike a blow for persimmons.
Yes, I did.
Do we have any persimmon growers in the room here?
Oh, I wish.
Yeah. I didn't know you could grow persimmons here. That's good information.
See?
They make excellent cookies.
There we go, Don. Yes. You might have some folks who you've won over here.
Yeah, actually, they are native to Indiana. I know that for a fact.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I've got them in my backyard.
See, all I know about... Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, and the nice thing about pawpaw and persimmons,
yeah,
very easy to take care of. Because they're used to this type of weather, rain patterns and everything. They grow very hardly.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you. That is a great tip. I appreciate it, Don, and I'm glad you were listening to the show.
Thanks, Don. It's a good show. I listen every Sunday.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I hope you continue to do that. Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
Same to you.
You know, the only thing I know about persimmons is Daffy Duck. Where Daffy Duck would say, thanks for the sour persimmon, Buster.
Yeah, eating them fresh, I think, is a different thing. Yeah.
If persimmons are at their absolute best if you wait till after the first frost.
Yep. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. I did ask that question earlier. I want to tell you about an article that a friend sent me, and it's apparently just out in Harper's Magazine. And it's called Broken Heartland, The Looming Collapse of Agriculture on the Great Plains. And it's just a magnificent article by Will S. Hilton, H-Y-L-T-O-N. Very interesting. And he goes out to talk to a lot of folks out in the Great Plains who are farming, have been farming. And one of the things he writes as he visits his farmer in Kansas, this guy's growing clover is one of his crops. And the farmer's name is Teske, and he says along the way, Teske explained why in a state filled with silos and cleaners, we had to drive so far to deliver his clover. The seed, it turned out, was organic, as were all of Teske's crops. Though he was quick to clarify that this was not just for moral reasons. On the contrary, organic farming seemed to him the only sensible option left. Decades of innovation had turned conventional farming into such an expensive and technical proposition that it was hopeless for anyone but agribusiness conglomerates to attempt it. This, he said, was the real cause of depopulation. Modern technology made it possible and more or less obligatory for a single owner to work 50 times as much land. So neighbors got to buying out neighbors and then were bought out themselves. The only way forward, Teske figured, was to reject all these modern innovations, at which point you were basically organic. That kind of blew me away. And and it's not the first time I've heard that as well. We just have a couple of minutes, but I was wondering if Mike, maybe you wanted to address that just a little bit about how we've backed ourselves into a kind of a technological corner in terms of growing food, haven't we?
I think there's absolutely no question that we've backed ourselves into a corner. And it really comes out of not only the agribusiness technology, but our farm policy that, in essence, creates a situation where farmers have to continue to grow the commodity crops of corn, beans, wheat, and can't experiment with more diverse rotations. Now, having said that, there are there are some unbelievably exciting stories with people like Dick Thompson in Boone, Iowa, who's probably 70 years old now, 75 years old, and has been at mixed corn and bean, hogs, beef cattle, cover crops. Very, very successful farmer. Out yields any of his neighbors, and he's an organic farmer. Gabe Brown in Bismarck, North Dakota, farms almost 1,000 acres with his son. Is organic, does incredible combinations of cocktail mixes of cover crops that he has built his soil organic matter from less than 1% to over 10%, can absorb a 5-inch rainfall with having no runoff. These guys are all incredible examples of people who are doing amazing things with organic farming, not, again, because of any specific moral reasons, but because it's good business and good stewardship.
And I mentioned before, and I'm going to, Sherry, put you on the spot for about a minute, talk about CRAFT, the Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training.
CRAFT is a network of farmers, new, experienced, young, old, and our region covers both sides of the Illinois-Wisconsin state line, sort of going up into near Madison and down near Ottawa. And we have about 100-plus farmers in the network. And then we also have Friends of Craft. So you can join Craft even if you don't have land and farm because you're interested in farming. And the main purpose of Craft is to share information. And so we organize 12 field days on member farms throughout the season. And we have a steering committee of new farmers and old farmers. Chris here is on the steering committee. Mm-hmm. And so the staff at the Learning Center work with the steering committee to decide on those topics. And we have, you know, anywhere from 10 to 40 people.
And, so, and the idea is to get the old farmers and the new farmers together, and they help each other out.
Yeah. Yes, with on very specific topics. So it's a farm tour, but it might be all about irrigation. Or,
okay, and I wanted to get that out. I've got a link to it on my. I have links to all of the information we talked about today. I want to thank you all for being on the show, Chris Parshall, Allison Parker, Sherry Doyle, Mike Sands. It's just been a fascinating conversation. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make a podcast of this and put this up.
Great.
So if folks want to hear our conversation, and I hope people will contact each of you. State Line Farm Beginnings, and we
have extended our deadline for that program to September 23rd.
Fabulous. You can get involved. That's it. We're done with the show today. At this point, I say go green, and you say go home. You ready? Go green or...
go home.
Very
Thank
good.
You, Mike.